Out there, our peace is calling in the bonds of love we meet for the world anew.
Welcome to Muffin Talk.
Kia ora and welcome to Muffin Talk. Muffin Talk is a weekly radio program to which I invite guests to talk about their work and their passion for issues on community programs, social justice, Bible studies, or the Catholic Church. My interviews are done in the studio of Planet FM or via Zoom. Today, I've invited Brother Kieran Finn to a Zoom recording for a broadcast. Brother Kieran, a warm welcome and haere mai to our radio program.
A kia ora, beate.
Brother Kieran Finn is a Champagnat brother and Bible scholar. He's originally from Gisborne and has spent many years in adult education, teaching scripture in New Zealand and abroad. We are approaching now the end of the current church year. And when we start Advent on Sunday, the 28th of November, we are preparing us for the coming of the Lord, for the birth of Jesus. In this context, Brother Kieran will give an online presentation on Monday, the 22nd of November, from 7 to 8:30 in the evening. The topic is the infancy narratives, Jesus, the early years. Brother Kieran, in my description of your presentation, I mentioned that we have four Gospels, but only two infancy narratives. How come?
Well, I think we could actually add Paul to that list because there's no infancy narratives with Paul. Paul knew only the crucified and risen Christ. And the early Christians would have begun what was most immediate to them, the passion, death, and resurrection. And that would have dominated in an oral culture. Now, that, of course, the second question that arises after what just happened is, what did Jesus do to get himself crucified? So we're now getting to the ministry, the teaching, the mission of Jesus. Two parts, beginning first with the passion, death, and resurrection, then the mission of Jesus Christ. And if you notice, that's Mark's gospel, isn't it?
Yes.
Then we have two gospels which have infancy narratives, and we'll develop what they're on about, what's going on there. But the thing to notice is that the last part of the gospel to be written is the passion, the infancy narratives. The Christmas stories come last. Even though they're the first part of the gospel we read, they're the last part to have come into being.
So you said, like, when you have a story and you say, so this is what happened, and now we are telling you why it happened, and so you go back to the history.
Threads. I like to use the image of a symphony, right? You've got the symphony, but you have, before the symphony, you have an overture. And all the threads that come out of the other two, the final two parts of the gospel, are there in the beginning.
But now, you don't recognize them.
Right. But so if we finally come to John's gospel. Now, what about this for an image? The waters of the womb give way to the waters of baptism. Give way to the waters of creation. In the beginning was the Word, right? So, yes, there is a link. But now we're focusing on the two Gospels that give us the infancy narratives, the Christmas stories. Even though we read them one way, they're written in the complete opposite. Out of Easter came the Gospels, and out of the Gospel ministry and mission of Jesus came the infancy narratives, the Christmas stories. We've got to get that right to understand them.
That's why we don't have a Christmas story in Mark. Mark was the first gospel, right?
Yes. We hadn't got around to telling Christmas stories. Mark never knew any of them.
So who wrote the first Christmas story?
Possibly it's Matthew, right? And we come to the question really then of where did Matthew get his Christmas stories from? And in the presentation of the Jesus of Matthew is the teaching. It's the teaching gospel. Jesus is the great teacher who commands at the end of the gospel to go out into all the world and teach them all that I've commanded you. So if you're going to teach, you've got to know the five great teaching discourses that begin with the Sermon on the Mount. Oh, now who was the great teacher of Israel, of the Jewish people? Their great teacher was Moses. So therefore, Jesus is the new Moses. So, well, what do we know about Moses? Well, there was an evil ruler by the name of the Pharaoh who sought to kill all the baby boys. That sounds familiar. Herod seeking to kill the baby boys under the age of two. That's, Joseph, the dreamer. Now, I think Joseph in the Joseph the dreamer, the people end up in Egypt, Joseph looking after them. We've got Joseph the dreamer in the New Testament too, haven't we? Remember how he's warned in dreams? He's warned in dreams, yes. So, yes, the messianic identity of Jesus as son of David, I think we can sort of hear people calling Jesus son of David, but we've got to get that message at the start. So in the genealogy, we get three lots of 14. 14. I know that number from somewhere. Do you know that in Hebrew, they count Aleph, Bet, Gimel, Dalet, that's the fourth letter. 1, 2, 3, 4. Four for Dalet, sixth letter is Wa, and then we get another Dalet. So in Hebrew, Dalet, Wa, Dalet is Hebrew's name. And if I add up the numbers associated with those letters, I get 4 and 6 and 4, which is 14. So what a nice way of saying three times Jesus, the son of David, right? That's one possible interpretation there, which I quite like, actually. But the
it's
son
quite
of David,
complicated if you don't know Hebrew.
I know, and if you don't know gematria, and everybody knows about 40s and 7s and so on and 12s. Yeah.
I think it's easier to remember twice 7.
Yes, right. Okay. So, yes. So the genealogy features, and in this one, we get an annunciation to Joseph.
Joseph.
Yes, the patriarchal nature of society. Messages have to be given. Now, listen to this one. Remember, the fulfillment of the Old Testament is critical. And back in Numbers, Balaam talks about a star will rise from Jacob and a scepter will rise from Israel. Oh, yes, so this great messianic figure is to be born. But how about this for saying from Isaiah, that a multitude of camels shall cover you. They shall bring gold and frankincense, and they shall proclaim the praise of the Lord. Does that
where's that?
That's from Isaiah chapter 60.
That sounds just like Matthew.
Yes, and who would it be? Who would fulfill it?
Well, the three wise men would come with it.
Now that's interesting. The Magi. People talk about three kings and so on. Yes, you're right. Magi, the wise men. All right. So they come. Now that's interesting. They're Gentiles. We've got Gentiles who recognize Jesus in that gospel. Now, at the end of the gospel, we have Pilate's wife. Now, she's a good Gentile because she comes and tells her husband, don't.
And so the Gentiles, course, just for anybody who might not know what a Gentile is. A Gentile is a non-Jew.
Our ancestors, us, isn't it? Yes, right. And so Pilate's wife. And then remember the centurion? Truly, this was the Son of God. Good Gentiles at the end. We've got to balance them up with good Gentiles at the beginning.
So the centurion who was putting a sword into Jesus' side at the cross, right?
Is that now, you've just got John.
Oh.
Right? You're right. Now, in Matthew, no, it's at his death, the centurion that recognizes him, the way that he dies. So, yes, we've got this balancing. So the threads in the gospel proper become the weaving together of the infancy narratives in Matthew. And the other gospel, of course, is the gospel of Luke. And at the very beginning of Luke, we meet Zechariah and Zachary and Elizabeth. Now, here's an elderly couple that I haven't had a son and the yearning for a son. I've heard that story somewhere before.
What about Sarah and Abraham?
Yes. And these people are wonderful. They're the perfection. They're really good Jewish people. But they haven't got continuity. Now, what else is happening? Well, you've got to go back in order to go forward with these infancy narratives. Now, they're all situated within God's divine plan. And we meet the opening figure of John the Baptist, then Jesus, who is to be a light of revelation to the Gentiles, and the glory of the people, your people, Israel. Now, look, when somebody important is arriving on the scene for birth and God's plan, then what we get is a particular way of telling a story. And the models, Luke uses the pattern of the Old Testament in order to tell us the story of Jesus' birth. The birth of an important person with a call to a mission. You name the child's parents. You then have the appearance of an angel. And Mary, of course, is startled. Hail, O favored one, blessed among women. Then the parent is disturbed by this visit. Mary, of course, acts with total trust. Wonderful. The birth of the child is announced. You shall conceive and bear a son. Then a question is asked. How can this take place? And then a sign is given. And the sign, of course, is that your cousin Elizabeth has conceived a child. Then, of course, the story comes to its conclusion. That's the pattern for people in the book of Judges like Gideon, Samson. It's the pattern often for the call of a prophet. And, of course, it's the pattern for the birth of John the Baptist. And, of course, what happens, they use the term diptych, where one story is matched by another story. And that's the way that Luke will give his account of the infancy narratives. Except, of course, when you get to a 12-year-old boy, which is hardly an infancy story. And that's the 12-year-old who goes and gets lost in the temple. And we know, well, when else does Jesus get lost, sorrowing for 3 days? We know the pattern, don't we? So we've got a beautiful example there of something from the end of the story being projected into the beginning of the story. But in Matthew 2, above the cross for Jesus is the King of the Jews. And King of the Jews only occurs at the end of Matthew's gospel and at the beginning when the Magi come. Where is he who is born the King of the Jews?
So the infancy story really connects to the Old Testament, to the Hebrew scriptures, and it reflects the way of thinking and of relating stories in the time of or just after Jesus' death. They were written way after Jesus' death, as I understand.
Precisely. The writing, the oral period, they were like for Mark, they were stories being told for 40 years. And even when Mark writes his story down, he relates it to the people, to the gathered people. So the first people to hear the gospel, it was proclaimed. But again, we emphasize the fact that the infancy narratives come out of the body of the gospel. The adult is the father of the child in the storytelling world.
So, but it's like what you said when you see you read a certain passage, like the King of the Jews, and then you think, oh, wasn't there the story of the three wise kings? And they were looking for the King of the Jews. So I think that it triggers the connection with them.
Oh, yes. Yes, it takes you into the gospel, but you know that it came out of the gospel in the first place. Take another example, the canticles, the songs, like the Song of Mary, the Magnificat. You go back to the story of Samuel and Hannah's prayer. It reflects, they almost mirror each other in quite substantial ways. So again, you see how out of the Hebrew scriptures, the Christian scriptures, and then you get the links right through. So, yes, I mean...
Brother Kieran, you've mentioned now a lot of parts of these infancy narratives that are very different, all relating to the Hebrew scriptures. What do they have in common?
Oh, that's a really important question for us to consider, because the details are different, stand out strongly, but the details in common are vital. It's an angel that comes relating the divine plan to the human participant, to Joseph in Matthew and to Mary in Luke. So the announcing angel is there. Both will state that the child comes from the house of David, and David is associated with Bethlehem, the family origins, so we get that detail. And the name, he shall be named Jesus. And, of course, that's the equivalent of the name Joshua, which means God saves. That element is there. And then, of course, Herod gets mentioned, interestingly, in two ways. The Herod who is mentioned among the great ones in Luke. So, yes, Jesus then is portrayed as one of the great ones that will affect world history. And then Herod, of course, is the villain of the piece in Matthew with the killing of the infants. Now, the virginal conception is tied up into both stories in some way. And Matthew, of course, is the Isaiah prophecy. Now, Nazareth, finally the story gets us to Nazareth. And Nazareth is a place where Jesus grows up. So, yes, that's the common core from both Gospels. And that's the basic heart core is solid.
So we have these elements are the same. And so is that the reason why the stories were merged in the culture of most countries? It's last year.
I think there are a lot of other influences. I think this is a good advertisement for the presentation you're going to do, because you don't find the ox and the ass in the story, do you? They come from
Isaiah.
I think St. Francis created the Christmas group, but it was Isaiah. Yes, the ox and the ass know their master, but my people do not know me, O Israel. Right? So, yes, and also, of course, your picture will give you three kings. We don't even get told the number, you know. We base that on the three gifts. We're not told. We're just told the wise men, plural.
Yeah, that reminds me that a couple of weeks ago or a few weeks ago, I interviewed a lady who was Zoroastrian, and she said that the priests of Zarathustra were called the Magi, and they were astronomers. They came from the east, from Persia, from the big Persian Empire, which was most parts of the Middle East were Persian Empire. So that's really interesting to know. And we were wondering where the Magi would come from. So we are in the way all connected again.
Right.
So where do the two gospel writers, so we'll have Matthew and Luke who write about the infancy stories. And so you have the same core information, but then it's a little bit different. And where would they have gotten the material from?
Well, the material obviously came from inside the rest of the gospel, and the telling of the story, I think it's significant because of the differences that are there. And the differences, we've had a look at what they have in common, but the differences sort of are pretty indicative that we get questions like, you know, that come out of those similarities. Was Jesus born in Bethlehem because Joseph and Mary lived there? That's what you get in the Gospel of Matthew. And, of course, that would be the, you know, you would take your wife to your family home area. So that's Matthew's Jewish pattern. Now, what does Luke do? He has them travel from Nazareth where they live because of the census from Quirinius. But the only thing we know about the census from Quirinius was that it took place in the year 6 CE, 10 years later. So, yes, that's his portrayal. And did a heavenly choir proclaim the birth of Jesus to shepherds? In Luke, the gospel of the poor. Or did the heavenly, or what celestial phenomena, stars and so on, lead the Magi to the house of Joseph and Mary in Bethlehem?
But when we come to the nativity scenes, one thing that is also quite striking is that some nativity scenes show a stable and a manger, and others show that that Jesus is born in a grotto or in a stone building, or you have different buildings, because I understand that here also you have differences between Luke and Matthew. And then you have all the inculturation where people said, well, he's born among you. So,
Well, you'll have to blame Luke for the manger. And incidentally, the manger would be a stone feeding trough. I actually love that image, because the stone feeding trough is very similar to where you would lay a body in an enlarged sort of semi-trough shape. So there's something so symbolic about that manger as well.
And Jesus is the bread of life.
Exactly right. So the Eucharistic thing. Well, again, did the family return peacefully to Nazareth shortly after the birth of Jesus and the visit to Simeon and Anna? Or did they have to take a detour? That was Luke's story. Did they have to take a detour to Egypt, right, and remain there until they're called out of Egypt? I've called my son. That's pretty Matthean in its own way, that one. So that's exile in Egypt. And then, of course, what Matthew does have, the annunciation to Joseph and the annunciation to Mary, yes, but then the return from Egypt, and they don't go to Judah, back to their hometown of Bethlehem, because of the problem of the ruler there, who was a brutal tyrant that Rome eventually deposed. So, yes, the Annunciation, the Gospel. Now, I think the finishing touch to this is that the Gospel in miniature is actually shown, because what happens in all of this? The Son is revealed by angels. He's proclaimed to shepherds and magi. See, revealed, proclaimed, accepted by Mary and Joseph, Simeon and Anna, but then rejected by Herod and the whole of the troubled Jerusalem. That's the pattern of the gospel, acceptance or rejection. That's the entire gospel, and it's set in the infancy narratives of those two gospels. The final outcome is based on the ending of the gospel rather than on the beginning. The beginning is just to establish the pattern that is going to emerge. Who accepts Jesus, who rejects Jesus, and so on. It's a beautiful pattern. The gospel issue is who Jesus is, and we find that out in the end. What does the gospel mean?
So that's the main point, that what is the meaning of it all?
Otherwise you could just arguing historical details, and the good Jew always asks the question, what does it mean?
Yes. So that's why the church doesn't have one story. They keep the church keeps the two stories, and people mix it up, and they don't know that these are two stories that are together.
Yeah, they don't know where it comes from. Like if you went shopping for Christmas cards, went to Mark, he'd look at you blankly. If you went to Matthew, he would say, well, I've got some pretty gory stuff here with the massacre of the innocents, but I think we better give you the one with the three wise men. And you go to Luke and you get the whole shooting box of it all, right? You get everything. Most Christmas cards would come from Luke. If you go to John, John will look at you and say, well, I don't have any Christmas stories, but if you'd like a banner with "In the beginning was the Word," that's about the best I can do for you.
And Matthew would have the whole fucker papa.
yes, that would be good for our country, definitely. But isn't it interesting how neatly structured that all is?
Yes, once you understand who it was written for, when you say that Matthew is the gospel for the Jewish people, then yes, they would know the story very well. And also when you, in a previous conversation, you said that for Jewish people, it was important that they had at least two witnesses. So if you have three wise kings, you have three witnesses.
Yes, yes. But you raise the question of genealogy, and that's fascinating because there's a genealogy in Luke's gospel. But it follows Jesus' baptism. So it's then that genealogy doesn't go back to Abraham. It goes back to Adam, the father of all humanity, and that means that this is a gospel for all the peoples.
It's for everyone.
So there's a lot in those genealogies, yes.
Absolutely. And it has more focus on the woman, on Mary, because I think that in Matthew, Mary doesn't speak.
I agree. She doesn't speak, but she has four famous ancestors in that genealogy.
Who are they?
Ruth is one. Rahab is another one. You have Tamar, who's a wonderful story. And then you have the wife of David, and that's Bathsheba. So you have these four ancestress, and they're very interesting ones because in terms of leading to marriage, exceptional births are tied up with a lot of them as well.
As we talked about in the series on the women in the Bible.
Yes, exactly.
Thank you so much, Brother Kieran. And I think that if people are available and can participate in this course on Monday, the 22nd of November, you'll learn a lot about the infancy narratives and what they mean, where they come from, and how come that we have two stories, quite different in many ways, similar also in other ways, but two stories from four Gospels. So two Gospel writers and Paul don't even mention the infancy of Jesus.
Well, just think of a symphony with an overture at the start that is sounding all the notes that come in the symphony.
Thank you, Brother Kieran. And what else is coming up? So we've just talked of the 22nd of November, so that's next Monday. And that will be about the infancy narratives. And on the 25th of November, 2 o'clock to 3:30 in the afternoon, Letitia Putumbadat is going to facilitate the second part of our session on Ignatian imaginative contemplation. And if you'd like to know more about it or refresh your knowledge, please let us know and join us via Zoom. And on Monday, the 6th of December, I will give a presentation on the nativity scenes. So that's how the creativity of people and within through the centuries, what they have done with the nativity scene. So all sessions are held on Zoom, so we don't depend on any respective alert levels. And for more information, please check out www.studyjoy.nz or send an email to info@studyjoy.nz. Gia Kahal, keep safe, and thank you very much, Brother Kieran.